Hello, good morning. My name is Edmond Tena Anulochu. Today we are doing jurisprudence. Straight to business. What is jurisprudence? This is one of the most difficult subjects to understand and master. But yet, with prudency, as the name suggests, it is possible. Now, jurisprudence comes from two words, juris and prudentia, which together mean the knowledge or wisdom of the law. It emanates from ancient Rome, and the object and end of the science, which is distinguished by the name jurisprudence, is the protection of rights. James Weil said this, writing a book on jurisprudence in 1825. Now, jurisprudence has to do with legal decisions and their reasons, and also what the law is and what the nature of law is. It is essentially philosophy, the philosophy of the legal theory of law. And when we talk about philosophy, we are talking about the foundational reasoning behind the law. So essentially, jurisprudence would deal with why certain judgments are made by the courts. Now, why do we study jurisprudence? It gives you knowledge to diagnose judicial policy and also gives you an understanding of the reason behind the legal principles and reasoning. That means the ratio decidendi. It also gives you a tool for inquiry, to inquire into the law, and also provides a judge with the various stages of the law. Now, John Austin said the appropriate subject of jurisprudence in any of its different departments is positive law, meaning positive law established or positioned in an independent community by the express or tacit authority of its sovereign or supreme government. Now, also, we can say that jurisprudence is the knowledge of law as a science combined with the art or practical habit or skill of applying. Okay. So, laws are legislated, and by legislation, we mean that the science of what to be done in making good laws. So, laws come out of the courts or parliament, okay? But the sources of law are debated by two schools of thought, which are the main schools in the philosophy of jurisprudence, which are the positivist and natural law schools of thought. Now, positivists think that there's no connection between law and morality. Any source of law is by a government or a court of law. Now, the naturalists are of more moral, philosophical digression. They also think that human reason and individual conscience are also parts of the law. So the positivists, however, think that laws once enacted by parliament is conclusive. But the naturalists recognize man-made law, but say that it is inferior to natural law. The naturalists recognize man-made law, but regard it as inferior to the natural law. The naturalists think about divine order, divine ordinance, but the positivists think about parliamentary law, enacted law by human beings. Let's delve a little bit more into the natural law theories. The natural law theories talk about the influence of God, religion, reason, human nature, and the virtue of common good as the test of the legality of law. Okay? Now, Marcus Tullius Cicero said, only just laws really deserve the name law. And in the very definitions of the term law, there inheres the idea and the principle of choosing what is just and true. He said, true law is right reason in agreement with nature. It is of universal application, unchanging and everlasting. Also, St. Augustine, writing the book The City of God, says, the will of God is seen as the highest law, the lex aeterna, the eternal law, the lex aeterna, for all people, something in the sense of stoic cosmic reason. So, the positive law is the lex temporalis, right? And natural law is lex aeterna. That's St. Augustine. Now, St. Thomas Aquinas, writing the Catholic moral teaching, says he developed Aristotle's idea and that the natural law is found in God. His ethical theory is absolutist and deontological, meaning that it focuses on the ethnicity of actions. Now, St. Thomas Aquinas recognizes four main kinds of law. The natural, which is an inbuilt disposition to know right from wrong. The eternal, which is God's perspective plan, which cannot be fully known. The human, which is man-made law. And the divine, which is from the Bible. Four kinds of law: natural, eternal, human, and divine. Now, he opines that bad law is contrary to the lex aeterna. He also argues that tyrannical law is a perversion of the law itself when it is made contrary to reason. Now, Gustav Radbruch, who lived between 1878 and 1949, opined law within the cultural context. And he said it was a reality, which means that it was to serve the legal value, the idea of law, which is justice. So this idea directs the relationships between moral beings and appeals to an ideal social order. So Gustav Radbruch opined his law within the context of culture, how people were to interact among themselves and an ideal social order. He said that justice is essential to the precept in its meaning to be directed towards equality. And in his concept of law, he put it within purposiveness. It has to have a purpose, it has to be just, and then there has to be legal sanctity. Certainty. So Gustav Radbruch said, within a concept of law, there are three factors. One, purposiveness. Two, justice. And three, legal certainty. So the law has to have a purpose for which it is enacted. Then two, it has to be just to promote social order, an ideal social order. And three, it has to have certainty. Now, he said something very interesting. He said, where statutory law is intolerably incompatible with the requirements of justice, statutory law must be disregarded in justice's favor. So, fair justice over statutory law, if statutory law was incompatible with the requirements of justice. Gustav gave preference to positive law. He says that unless its conflict with justice reaches so intolerable a level that the statute becomes in effect false law and must therefore yield to justice. And listen to what he said. He said, where there is no attempt of justice, where there is no attempt at justice, where equality, which is the core of justice, is deliberately betrayed in the issuance of positive law, then the statute is not merely false law, it lacks completely the very nature of law. So for him, positive law can be enacted, which is statute. But if it betrays justice, then it is completely false law. And then it betrays and lacks completely the very nature of law. Now, let's go to someone who is very interesting. Lou Levoix Fuller, simply Fuller. Lou is L-O-U. Levoix is L-U-V-O-I-S. Fuller, F-U-L-L-E-R. He lived between 1902 and 1978. Now, listen to this. He says, Fuller rejects the conceptual natural law idea that there are necessarily substantive moral constraints on the content of law. So he has stepped back from morality being equal to law. But he says he believes that law is necessarily subject to a procedural morality. Very interesting human being. He explains it. He said, human activity is purposeful or goal-oriented in the sense that people engage in a particular activity because it helps them to achieve some end. So he's being purposive, just like Gustav. Now, Fuller also says that nothing is law unless it is capable of performing law's essential function of guiding behavior. And to be capable of performing this function, a system of rules must satisfy the following principles. This is what the principles he gave. He named them Fuller's 8 conditions of legality. For law to have legality, 8 conditions. Now, 1. It has to be expressed in general terms. 2. It has to be generally promulgated. 3. Prospective in nature, not retrospective. Prospective in nature. 4. Expressed in understandable terms. It must be comprehensive. 5. Consistent with one another. The laws must not contradict each other. 6. Not requiring conduct beyond the powers of the affected parties. 7. Not change so ever frequently that the subject cannot rely on them. And 8. Administered in a manner consistent with their wording. Administered in a manner consistent with their wording. So, in summary, for the natural law theory, there has to be a test of legality. And the test of legality has to be within the precepts of justice. It must not betray the essential requisitions of justice. Now, for the natural law theorists, they also believe in God being a part of law, that law emanates from God. And also emanates from human reason and human nature and conscience. And it is purposefully for the common good. Good. Now let's go to positivism. Now, positivism is also a view, a school of thought, one of the 2 schools of thought in jurisprudence. It's a view of law. What the law is. It says that law is positive or posited. Law is man-made and positive in nature. Law does not depend on divine commandments or reason of human nature. So this is in sharp contradiction to the naturalist theories. Now, law is an artifact of man's action. The positivists think that law is an artifact of man's action. Now, this is the validity of law in positivism. It says that law is rules, norms, regulations, or principles that are stated, posited, or declared in accordance with a declared procedure. by a person or group of persons competent to do so. So if you are not competent to do so, if it doesn't follow procedure, then it is not law. It is not posited, then it is not law. So now, how do we test the validity of a law? It says the validity of a rule as law is a function of certain social facts of that state. Some of the facts are: who must declare, who must make the law? The judges, parliament, chiefs, our parents, who? How should the declaration be made? Should it be written, unwritten? What should be taken into account in making the law? This is the test for validity in positivism. And it is called the fact thesis. The fact thesis. Now, there are two: the separation thesis and the fact thesis. The separation thesis is this. It says that law and morality are conceptually distinct. They are different. Unlike the naturalist, the separation thesis of the positivist thing that law and morality are conceptually distinct. Klaus Faber says the definition of the law must be entirely free of moral notions. H.L.A. Hart, he says, simple contention that it is in no sense a necessary truth that laws reproduce or satisfy certain demands of morality, though in fact they have often done so. Okay, so within positivism itself, regarding the nature of the law, there are two subset of the there are two schools of thought regarding morality and whether or not it's inclusive or exclusive of the law. So they have the inclusive and exclusive positivism. So Jules Coleman and Hart are inclusivists. They think that the rule of recognition may incorporate moral constraints on the content of law. Jules Coleman and Hart, they are inclusivists. They include a little bit of morality in the content of law. So they say that the rule of recognition may incorporate moral constraints on the content of law. Now, Joseph Raz is an exclusivist, and he says the existence and content of law can always be determined by reference to its sources with recourse to moral argument. So rather, the sources of law give it its recognition rather than straight moral constraint, but it can give with recourse to, so with some subjugation to moral argument. Okay, now let's move on to Austin and the command theory of law. Austin says, law simply and strictly so-called, set by a political superior to a political inferior. So Austin is saying that law, strictly so-called law, is a set of rules by political superior to a political inferior. Now, he also says that law not properly called in its lesser sense is made by people with power over others, especially those which are not political powers. So like a priest, a teacher, a parent. So they are called positive morality or law, or laws by analogy, or laws by metaphor, which of which merely attract disapproval. So laws by analogy are rules set by public opinion or community values, such as fashion, codes of conduct, and how people behave. Those are laws by analogy. They are set by public opinion or community values. So laws by metaphors are scientific phenomena, such as the laws of gravity. They are scientific principles. Okay. Now let's go into Austin and his definition of the law. He says that law is a command by a determinate commander, superior or sovereign to the bulk of a society, which is in the habit of obeying the law and is enforced by the threats of punishment. There are three elements here: a command, a sovereign, and sanction. All right, these are the elements of Austin's definition of the law. It says that the judge is a delegate of the sovereign. So judge-made law is indirectly the creation of the sovereign. The sovereign delegates legislative functions to other institutions, and this includes the judiciary. The law from the court is a tacit command of the sovereign. Now, who is the sovereign? In Ghana, according to Article 125, the sovereign is the people of Ghana. The law emanates from the people of Ghana, and so the people of Ghana are the sovereign. Now, Hart criticizes Austin and says that laws are not commands. He says that not all laws are amenable to the descriptive terms of orders backed by threats. For example, laws on will. If you don't do a will, nobody punishes you. Or law of contract or marriages, right? Hart's criticism of Austin also says that the order portion, the order that Austin says is law backed by threats, does not account for the mode of origin of all laws. He says not all laws are deliberate acts. Okay, so there are some of them that are unintentional, they are custom. There are certain behaviors that have been so practiced that it becomes law, so to speak, but they are not particularly orders backed by threats. It says that the notion of the habit of obedience is inadequate, because when the original legislator dies, then what happens to the obedience? And also, Hart says that laws are obeyed before habit is established. So it is not in the habit of obedience, but they are actually obeyed before the habit starts, the habit of obedience starts. And Hart also says that Austin's notion of sovereignty is deficient, that the unlimited sovereign may not be true in all states. And also, when law emanates from the constitution, is that the sovereign, the concept of the sovereign then becomes a little bit deficient. So we'll leave it here and go on to the ideas of HLA Hart in our next podcast. Thank you for listening. Have a beautiful day.